The meeting will come to order. As you know, we're gathered here this morning to try and get some policy, at least, that we can pass, because there are folks who need some of the things that are in this bill. And what we did is, as we did this bill, this is essentially the technical bill, policy bill that we had from the department. We looked at the Senate bills, both their policy bill and their finance bill. And the only things that you will find in here are essentially what is in the Senate also. So that we're trying to make sure that we have some policy that the department needs, et cetera, that we can get passed for this year. Whether or not our committee's finance bill comes, you know, is brought up again in taxes, I can't be sure. So we are moving forward with this bill to try and get as much done as we can. And I will ask Representative Biskins, who was the original author of this bill, to walk through it. You all have a list of the items that are in this bill, and we have a few amendments, a couple things that were forgotten. Of course, we always forget something. And but other than that, we'll have a couple of amendments, and then I only have three amendments before me. Four amendments before me. And two of them were things that were overlooked that were in our bills and are in the Senate as well. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'd like to move that House File 3179 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration.
Representative Biskins, would you please go through what we have in this bill so that I don't want anybody to feel that they didn't understand what was in this.
Madam Chair, if it pleases the Chair, I'd like to first move the AO 6-16-20 amendment to have that before the committee.
All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think you did a good job of laying out the philosophy of what we've put together in this bill. Now, one of the very first criteria that I used in putting this together was, number one, what does our department and schools need to have that would lead to the smooth functioning of our public school system for the next calendar year? So that was one of the highest criteria that we used. The second criteria, of course, as you already mentioned, Madam Chair, is there are four bills, four omnibus-type bills dealing with education that have been produced in either the House or the Senate, and we looked at items that were in both of those bills, either sames or similars in both of those bills. So there's already some general agreement on the item pieces. Now, Madam Chair and members, I will point out there are two notable exceptions to that rule. And if you have the bill comparison spreadsheet in front of you, I will highlight those two notable exceptions. The first is at the bottom of page one of the bill comparisons, and that's the item dealing with the school report cards. That item was only in House File 4040, and we can deal with that a little later. And the second item, if you will turn to the second page of this Excel spreadsheet, under Article 5, elimination of reserve accounts was another item that was only in House File 4040. And I believe, Madam Chair, those are reserve accounts that are obsolete reserve accounts. So that's just a cleanup language. All right.
That is correct, members. And actually, both of those were pretty they didn't cause any controversy in this committee. And they seemed like good ideas, and that's why they are both included.
Madam Chair, the remainder of the bill, rather than walk through it piece by piece, most of this, I think every piece in here has been heard before in this committee or in the policy committee. It's fairly straightforward at this point, and I'll sit for questions if it pleases the chair for not to insult anyone's intelligence about their ability to read what we have in front of us. And I know that we were able to get the bill to members yesterday afternoon, and it's not a typical 400 page omnibus bill, all right? So
that has been waiting to happen all year. I can't tell you how many times I have almost tripped over that darn wire.
And Madam Chair, one of the
representative,
Madam Chair, one of the fun things with fair skinned blondes is it's so easy to see when they're embarrassed. Representative Dorn would know that. Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Are there questions? Representative Grylin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We appreciate having this yesterday, and we do have some amendments coming up that we understand we can make from the other bill, other non-controversial things that we want to add in, I think about four. But the one section that we have concerns about is on page 23, section 11. And this was in the other bill, and it was an amendment put in that was explained as more time being needed for the changeover from the basic skills test to the MCA2s. But, on examination and getting feedback from the outside world, who maybe sometimes pays more attention to this than we do here, because schools are being notified apparently of this change already, that instead of the state fair time of getting test results, it would be on November 30th, or no later than November 30th, then there's concern from teachers that they wouldn't have that testing data in time or in a timely manner in order to have it for using the information in their teaching during the school year. And in fact, Representative Sikora and I serve on the Stakeholders Assessment and Accountability Group, or whatever the name of that group is. And that group, with many more learned souls than those of us around this table, are pushing for having those results come out in May, when they could actually have it, when they still have the intact class, the parents could communicate with that teacher about how their kids did and compliment and praise or question. But now, and I know this is a one-time thing because we're changing the testing, but the question is, why so very long? If they couldn't get it done by September, how about like October 1st or something like that? It's of course important to get it accurate and get all the scores vetted and all the ratings and all of the cut scores figured out, but it seems to be too long of a time. And so we would like to suggest, Madam Chair and Representative Biskin, changing that to no later than October 1st.
October 1st?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. I think, we talked about this yesterday, and I told you I was trying to get a hold of somebody so that we could better understand why this date was put in here. And this is a one-time thing, but I would ask Mr. Van Sickle and Ms. Olson, if you would come down and explain what the timeline is with the new test so that we can better understand why this is in here. Randy. Pardon me, Representative Dameron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess one question that I would have, Representative Grathing, what you're saying makes some sense. I guess what I would like to find out, and maybe they can speak to this, is this is talking about public posting of this information. Maybe contrast that with when the school district might have the information Because whether the public has it or whether the school has it are kind of two different things in terms of what your concern is, I think, Representative Greiling, about teachers and school districts using the information, even though it may not be posted public because they're waiting for that time difference for correcting mistakes or whatever, possibly they'd have it earlier. So I'd like to hear that distinction.
Mr. Van Sickle.
Madam Chair, I'm Tim Van Sickle, the Director of Testing here in Minnesota. Let me try to address the issue that the representative just brought up. Schools will have preliminary data early in August. I can give you a lot of details about why things are delayed, but we will give them preliminary data that's not available to the public sometime, probably the middle of August. I can go through the whole schedule if you would like. We have spent a lot of time, as you know, working on the new MCA2s, and part of this this one-time delay is certainly because we are changing over to a new test. Typically, we have data back in the schools about the end of June, which can't happen this year because we're doing what is called standard setting, setting the cut scores on the levels the last part of June.
Can you just explain for some members of the committee what you go through to do that as briefly as you can?
As briefly, okay. I'll try to be terse. That's difficult at times for me. I'll try to be terse, Madam Chair. What happens is we'll finish up testing next week. The third week of testing is next week. It takes about 3 weeks to collect all that information and another 3-4 weeks to get the constructed response items scored. So we will do all of that and start what's called standard setting the 27th of June. Typically, we already have scores in place, but since we don't have performance levels set, we can't give scores to the schools at that time. Standard setting is we bring a panel of educators together that look at the test results and the test scores, the test items. They recommend where each cut score for each of the levels will be. That'll take approximately 4 days, which is pretty onerous given how many standards have to be set, one for each content area in each grade. So we've got a pile of work, and we're going to work the teachers and educators very hard at that point in time. We then will bring those recommendations, and they are recommendations at that point, to the TAC panel, our National Technical Advisory Committee, on the 7th of July. And with their approval, we will make a recommendation to the commissioner where the cut scores for each content and each level and each grade will be set on July 12th. Sounds like at that point we should be able to finish up things. It's not quite that easy. We then have to apply those cut scores to 520,000 students roughly, make sure that that data is correct. That will take us until about August 8th. We then load all of that data into a computer system that deals with accountability and the report cards and all of those things. While we're loading that information and QCing that, we will start sending preliminary data about the middle of August to school districts. They'll have their student-level data in a data file, so they'll know what each child has done. They will have a summary of what their school and district looks like on the new tests. About the middle of that in what we call a PDF format, so that they can print that out fairly easily. We also have to do some transition from the old MCAs to the new MCAs in the accountability system so that we can do rolling averages for Safe Harbor. Most of you are familiar with that concept. We hope to open the accountability system the first week in September. They then have, they, districts and schools, have 30 days for which they can edit the data for errors. Look at, this student wasn't really supposed to be classified as an LEP student. They're really a general education student. This student was refused to take the test. This student was medically excused. Whatever those things are that need to be fixed, along with simple things like people's names, etc.
Did you say that the district has 30, districts have 30 days beginning September 1st?
September 1st.
All right.
That puts us into October for the data to have been edited. They also, during this time, get to appeal their AYP status. you know, if they think there's something amiss or they have a reason why they shouldn't be put on the list, they get to appeal that. And actually, I believe they get another 15 days after that window closes for appeals to be looked at. Once the window closes, the first part of October, we then take all that edited data and give it back to our test vendor, who then prints score reports, the physical paper. And so students won't see their data until about 2.5-3 weeks after that window closes. It's 520,000 pieces of paper, four-page folders that need to be printed and QC'd. So we're looking at probably the second week of November at the very earliest, if we do everything in terms of the quality control processes that we've written and put into place. U.S. Ed obviously would like us to be done earlier, too, and I'd like to be done earlier, but it's as fast as I think we can make that happen.
All right, so after, how long does it take the test vendor to get everything back to the schools?
About 3 weeks to print and ship all of the reports, and that's if we do a lot of quality control, well, the AYP window is open. We'll check reports and data files and all of those things, but it's just printing all the paper and getting it shipped out, and so we're looking at probably the second week in November before it's all there.
Well, I remember 1 year, am I correct, 3-4 years ago when the data was printed. I mean, they hadn't had a chance to correct. All the data was made public before they had a chance to correct, so there was a big hullabaloo over that.
That was prior to my coming on board, but I do remember there were some issues. I can't speak directly to them, but it wouldn't be unusual for a state to have put something out rapidly and have an error. Having been a vendor, I had been in that position before, but I can't speak to that particular issue.
Representative Grothen.
Madam Chair, well, I realize this is an unusual year changing over the tests, so I think I would be open to some kind of language that would exonerate errors for this one time in order to get it out in a more timely fashion. I still don't think it needs to take quite this much time. I know that you've got all these lengthy appeals in there. Maybe those could be shortened up for this one time in order to get the information out in a more timely fashion.
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chairman, Representative Greiling, the windows for correction are in the federal law. We have to give 30 days for the appeal process and then an additional 15 days after it closes for final appeals. So we're following. Those timelines are set by the federal law, the NCLB law.
Representative Clinton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my concern with changing to the October 1st date is that that would be right on the heels of the end of the appeal window, and the school district may not have a chance to respond to whatever the response is going to be to their appeal. So it almost seems like this is... Since this might be good for some of the school districts who have to get ready to respond to a potential change in the data between the September 1st and October 1st time frame. So I'm wondering what the schools are thinking about if we accept the time frame as the department's laying it forward. Would the schools want that information to go public right away October 1st, or would they rather it be delayed a little bit to give them time to respond or craft a response? Is there anyone here from the school districts that would want to respond to how this would affect them?
And, Madam Chair.
Representative Grothen.
If there's any schools that care to respond, to me, the part of this is also not just the school, the families who need to have the information in timely fashion. And if it was information that showed that their own particular child needed a particular skill, maybe they, when they're setting their plans with the teacher, which a lot of schools do nowadays, they could highlight whatever it is their child needs to work on. So I think it's not, the schools are often, just like the state, worried about extraneous things, and parents are worried about the kids and their schools learning and not bad publicity and that sort of thing. And I think that's the tug and pull here with, you know, so much caution on the part of people like ourselves, and I think the schools might play into that as well, whereas parents are looking for, you know, what's really good for their own students, and it's different, sometimes it's very different dynamics.
Madam Chair, just a question there for the Greiling then. Are you trying to get at making sure that the families have the scores sooner or that the schools have the scores sooner? Because it appeared to me from this timeline the schools will have the score, but that Section 11 is about when that has to go public, say in a newspaper or such. And so, because I know from just my experience working with these a couple years ago, we had this information early on, and we're adjusting our curriculum accordingly per student and per grade level based on preliminary results of this, even before that data went public. So I'm not sure that curriculum wouldn't be adjusted before the data went public. So I guess I'm kind of wondering what your goal is.
Madam Chair, and I know that
make this brief, please. You guys, we are only going to spend a few more minutes on this amendment, and we will move on, and so we'll have to make a decision pretty fast. Go ahead, Representative.
And I know others want to get in here, too, so I'm going to pass and let some of the other members who want to talk.
Right.
I know Representative Dabney's had his hand up quite a while.
Bernardi. Thank you, Madam Chair. When I look through these, I try to jot down the time frames, and we're talking about the back-end dates right now. When I add these up, it looks like there's leeway of like 10 weeks in here, that there's a possibility of shortening those up. So I don't know that we need to micromanage, but I think our outcome is for students not only to have their schools be looking at this data and the parents, but for parents to have school choice, too, on where to send their kids. And so they need that data as early as possible in the school year.
I'm trying to understand where you can find several weeks, because if the districts have to have 30 days to correct the data, and that's federal law, and then they have to have time for appeals, and that is federal law, I'm wondering where you find several weeks.
Well, Madam Chair, if you start back on the May 1st date, when the MCAs are done, they said it takes 3 weeks to collect the data, 3 weeks to construct a response. Well, right there, that's 6 weeks. That's about June 14th, and they're not doing the standard setting until June 27th. That's 2 weeks leeway right there. Then the national panel, the standard setting happens in 4 days. The national panel isn't meeting until about a week after that. I mean, I didn't want to micromanage this, but, and it goes on, I found another thing like that, a week, another one, 3.5 weeks. If you could shorten some of those up, I didn't want to micromanage it, but the outcome is we want to get this out earlier.
All right, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure who to direct this to, but my concern is the impact of the schools in getting this data late. If they move to AYP status, if they remain on AYP status for an additional year, what are the ramifications for that? And I'm wondering if there's anybody in the room who can either speak to that or allay my concerns or inflame my concerns or whatever it might be.
Thank you, Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative, the agreement with the United States Department of Education is that with the preliminary data would come preliminary status for AYP, so that the schools would get a preliminary judgment of what their status was. For example, if it looks like they're going to have to provide supplemental services, they'll have to start planning for the supplemental services until the time that we finalize the data. And they're either excused or it is firmed up.
Madam Chair, Ms. Wilson, and I can't read my own handwriting.
Representative Dabney.
I can't read my own handwriting at this point. Preliminary data is in August?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Representative Maslow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to take a slightly different tack here. Logistically, even if we could pull it off to get it done earlier, I wouldn't. And the reason is this. It seems to me that the primary goal that we have here is making sure that we're addressing the progress of the individual students. The second goal would be that we are addressing the development and growth of our school, of individual schools. And the third is we're measuring the ability of districts to move forward. I think those are all appropriate and admirable efforts. If we try to put out results in October, it now muddies the water by bringing in another issue, and that is elections that are coming up on November 7th. And I think that's a mistake, because suddenly this report becomes a political football. And it's somewhat of a concern to me that that would happen in statewide elections, but it is a huge concern for me that that would happen in dozens of school levies that are going to be coming up on November 7th. And it's always so difficult to start picking away at something when a message can be conveyed in a 10-second soundbite that perhaps has a lot more information that needs to be brought forward. And to put school districts in that kind of a position just before they're coming in for levy elections, I think is really taking the wrong kind of step. I think it's important, frankly, that this is a report when we're talking about a statewide published report on our schools. I think that's a report that ought to come out after November 7th. And so even if we could do it faster logistically, I think that would be a big mistake.
Well, I think you make a good point, but I think the main argument then would be if that data has not had a chance to be corrected, then it's really unfair to schools.
Right.
We'll have five more minutes on this, and then we're voting. Representative Greiling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Meslow, to me, you bring up another point that is kind of hanging in the room here, and that is politics. And always politics plays into the timing of the release of information. And I would hope that we wouldn't be inserting politics here so the public, you know, gets the information after an election, when what we're supposed to be doing with testing data is helping students, helping schools, helping the greater community to know what is going on. And I think the voters who are voting on levy referendums have a right to know how their money is being used, too. I think that that's a really good selling point for levy referendums, is we're doing a really good job here, and we need to continue, so we need to renew our levy. Or, you know, we are too strapped to do a good job, so we need this levy. I don't think that withholding information for the public just so you can pass elections, whether it's a levies or any other election, is a good reason to withhold data from the public.
So, Representative Greiling, would you renew your verbal amendment, please?
Madam Chair, I renew my amendment to change on line 23.13. November 30th to October 1st, and I would request a roll call vote.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
It is your bill.
Madam Chair, I think some things, you know, from a school administrator's point of view that I'd like to put out. Number one, Representative Brown, you and I both share a deep desire to have this information to the schools as quickly as possible. Middle of August is a little late from a school administrator's point of view when trying to plan preschool planning around this information. However, this section does not deal with when the data gets to the schools. I share your desire to get it to the schools in May, for goodness sakes, and hopefully we'll get there. And you and I will work together to put that language into law in upcoming years if we're both blessed to be back in this fine institution. However, this section doesn't deal with when the schools get it. This section, the schools are going to get it in about mid-August. Now, something that's important to note is that data practices law does not prevent the district from releasing its data when it gets it. Right. So if the district, at this point wants to release its data, they're pleased. They have no appeals. The district can release the data. But if the district itself feels that there is something wrong here, right, with this data, that's what the whole appeals process is about. And I'd hate to see it published before that appeals process is exhausted. I think that would be unfair to the schools. It'd be unfair to the districts. It'd be unfair to the families. Madam Chair, I'd encourage a no vote.
All right. With that, we are going to go ahead and vote. Representative Dorn, one last comment.
Oh,
Did you have your hand up, or was I mistaken?
Madam Chair, the quick comment is that, you know, in listening to the discussion, it still seems to me that we could go earlier, because this is just a one-time change, and I know we're making a transition, but in hearing about the federal requirements for timeline and all of the rest, it would seem to me that that isn't a problem any other time, so it seems to me that, it, you know, that there'd be some wiggle room in this state. So I just make that observation, Madam Chair.
Representative Dorn, this is a one-time thing, and it is because there is a brand-new test. They have to set brand-new cut scores. We're beginning to do value-added. We're looking at all those pieces, and I think it's just too much to accomplish with a brand-new test.
And Madam Chair, I realize that point, but I'm hearing that required by law, federal law, to give this amount of time and this amount of time.
Right.
And we have, you know, this concern and that concern, but that because this is one time, it would seem to be those would always be part of.
We have been able to accomplish it by September 1st before.
Yes, and so I.
But this year, because of the new test.
I'm comfortable with sometime in between, though, because some of those arguments don't seem to.
Okay.
To hold as much weight, given that it's only one time that we're even saying we need to do this. So.
Representative Erickson.
Yes, one final comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is permissive language. So if the department feels pressure from school districts, from parents, they'll move the state to an earlier date because it's just may delay. It's not must delay.
All right. We are well informed and ready to vote. No.
Gemmer?
No.
Kreiling?
Yes.
Bernardi?
Yes.
Biskin?
No.
Gavney?
Yes.
Doran?
Yes.
Deacon?
Yes.
Erickson?
No.
Heidgerken?
No.
Johnson?
Yes.
Klinzing?
No.
Mesmo?
No.
Newman?
No.
The vote being 8 noes and 6 yeses, the amendment does not prevail. The amendment that was just passed out.
Madam Chair.
Yes. I'm sorry, Representative. Who said Madam Chair?
We both said. Do you want to flip a coin?
The amendment does not prevail. Yes, Representative. I don't understand your question. What was that?
Which one of us would you like to go first? It's your choice.
I think it's your voice that I heard first.
All right,
so
thank you.
Very quickly, please, Representative.
Out of respect for that last discussion, I specifically did not ask Dr. Van Sickle to speak to the smudge issue that's been raised by a number of districts around the state with the current testing. And this, I think, is probably the only forum where this committee would have a chance to hear from the department on that issue, which goes right to the question of the integrity of the data or the validity of the data, perhaps. And I'm wondering if Dr. Van Sickle would be able to speak to that at this point.
Could we ask, not this moment, Doctor. I would like to get through the other amendments and have the bill ready to go. We are due on the floor at 9, and it is almost 8:30 at this point in time. So what we'll do is we'll get through the rest of these, and these shouldn't be a big deal because I think you're familiar with most of them.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Heidgerken, you're next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if you picked up your papers today at the St. Paul Pint Press, has got the results of the written test in the sophomores. And I think with the school board lobbyist here, as well as the administrator, a lobbyist in Ed, Minnesota, among others, they're all lobbying for education. I see Minnesota's at 91.2%. So, being that we're all on the education committee, it's something that I think we can all feel proud of and be happy about. So, the results are in the papers. You can find out how your individual school districts did, and it was good to see this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Heidgerken. It's always nice to have some good news. All right. I passed out the Perpich Amendment. It was in both bills. I was hoping to put it in, but because we don't have the fiscal note, which, by the way, saves levy, I guess I can't offer it. Is that correct? Okay, we'll just skip that, and we'll go on to the next one, which is one that was overlooked that is in both bills, And this is the, whose is this? I don't know whose this is. A13?
I don't know what it is.
Pardon?
Yes.
This was the consolidated financial statement, which we did have in our bill, and I believe is in the Senate, correct? And so it's, you know, not a big deal. We barely discussed it here, but if there's any objection, it says that by December 15th of the calendar year of the unaudited financial data, the commissioner shall convert the audited financial data into the consolidated financial statement format. Right? It was in our finance bill, and it's both in both the Senate bills. So, you know, we'll just call for a vote on that. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. All right. There's the other one that's here. I don't know whose this last one was, but this one's mine. This is the special ed billing issue for the intermediate districts that we discussed. We had some testimony on here, and we discussed to some extent. And I guess when we went through and tried to make sure we had the pieces that were in both, we missed this one. So, if there's any questions or comments about A14, it is coming to you. I will wait till you have it, and then we can see if you have any questions. All right, are there any, now that you've had a chance to see it, you probably recall what it was about. Is there any question on this amendment? This, I believe, gives them a waiver, right, for a year? Was there any concern about this amendment? Having been in both bills, I suspect you all know what it is. So everybody has A14 in front of them. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Now, Representative Dorn, do you have another amendment?
Madam Chair, I thought an amendment had been drafted that I said I was willing to offer, but I don't know that the right language was drafted because I was offered because I think the bill had gone through another engrossment and I'm not sure what shape it's in. So maybe we could take
all right, we have
could
something we that some looks like this. Are there other amendments?
Yes, if there's another one, let me double check to see what you've got.
I was not aware of another amendment.
Madam Chair, we understood from staff that we could just move items from the original House File 4040 into this bill today. And I have four for our members to do orally. We would take the very same language that's in the...
But you didn't print them up for us to look at?
No, Madam Chair. But we would all recognize them because they're just things we had passed. They were not controversial. They have no cost. And they are all for our members that aren't in this bill.
And are they all in the Senate bills as well?
Madam Chair, to my understanding.
Okay, it would have been nice if you could have alerted us so that I could have checked on those. What are your four amendments?
Madam Chair, the first one is in House File 4040, Article 1, Section 26. This is Representative Hilty's Willow River Early Levy Referendum. I'm sorry, that one is not in Senate file, so I could skip that one. But the other three... Pardon me? Well, I could offer it, but I mean, I... Actually, I would like to offer those, Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins, was it your understanding that we were going to pick up any of these things? I have asked the tax chair to include any of those things that we passed in our bill in the tax bill, any of those fund transfer type things. So, Representative Biskins, was it your plan to include any of this?
Madam Chair, it was not.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Grimes.
Madam Chair, it's my understanding there's not going to be a tax bill, and these are all no-cost items.
That is quite debatable, I would say.
I would too, Madam Chair. So that's why I'd like to offer them here, just for cover. And if it turns out they're in the tax bill, then they certainly don't need to come forward after the conference committee.
All right, what do you have? The Willow River, you said, doesn't go in. What else do you have?
Madam Chair, I'll give you the complete list. The second one is Representative Latz's child maltreatment language. That is in Senate File 3781 in a slightly different version. The third one is Representative Peterson's cooperative facility grant language. That is in Senate File 3781. And then the final one is Representative Hosh and Representative Hilty's lease levy authority. In Article 4, Section 10 of our House File 4040.
Quite honestly, Representative, if we're going to take up those pieces, then we should be taking them up for everybody. So, you know, I would be willing to do another bill, you know, and pass it out of here with these things in it. Of course, we'll have to go to taxes with that. But because it affects levies. It all affects levies. This bill was not going to go to taxes. It was going to go straight to rules. So anything that we put in that affects levies one way or the other has to be run through taxes. I really don't want to go back there. I'm not excited about another FOC amendment added on to this little thing or something.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Representative Biskin's bill, so I do think he controls it, and I'd like to hear from him.
Representative Biskin.
Madam Chair, I have no problem if we want to vote on these. I would ask on each of these items that we vote no. Again, I think you bring out the point, three of the four. In two of the four would force the bill to go to taxes. The cooperative facilities grant does deal with money in a limited fashion. The child maltreatment, I think, wasn't a slam dunk issue in committee. It was an issue that some people had some questions about. So on each of the four, I'd encourage no votes.
Representative Grilling.
Madam Chair, I would like to offer them individually anyway, just so we
okay.
can have a vote.
You just go right
and then I just couldn't resist commenting, however, on Representative Erickson's statement. You know, this is a Democratic legislature. We're all elected. And the idea that one person controls the bill that determines the fate of all of our students around the state, I have to take great exception to Representative Erickson.
Representative Grilling, we are going to vote on your amendments.
Thank you, Madam.
And I think the author does get an opportunity to comment. Does that mean he's in control? No. But it means he gets an opportunity to comment. That's what he just received, is the opportunity to comment. All right, we will take up first the Latz child maltreatment issue. All those in favor of Representative Grilling, did you want to? No, you didn't call for a roll call vote. All those in favor of Representative Grilling's amendment that to include the child maltreatment language, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Chair is in doubt. Please raise your hands. All those in favor, raise your hand. Okay, those opposed? The nays have it. Amendment is not adopted. Speak up, people, so that I don't have to count. Hosh, Representative Hosh's amendment, and what was that one again?
Madam Chair, this is the Ricori and Faribault Lease Levy Authority. It's actually Representative Fritz's bill as well.
All right. The Lease Levy Authority. This was to do administrative?
What was this?
Allow them to... Okay. To lease
administrative space.
Okay. This was the one to allow them to lease administrative space. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No. Amendment is not adopted.
Hilty.
What is the Hilty one again?
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty's is the Willow River Early Levee Recognition.
Okay. You all remember that one, right? That was the one where they could recognize some of the levy money that would come in if they passed a referendum. This coming fall, they could recognize half the year, first year levy early. Correct?
Madam Chair, that's a good summary.
All those in favor of that one, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment is not adopted. Okay, are there any other amendments? I believe we have the...
had one more.
Oh, you had a fourth one. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Aaron Peterson, this is the Cooperative Facilities Grant language. It was in Article 4, Sections 1 through 4, and Section 7.
Madam Chair,
Representative Biskins.
Madam Chair, I'd encourage a no vote.
Actually, that language is in the bonding bill, Representative.
Yeah, that's right. Madam Chair, and it's in the Senate... Senate File 3781 as well.
So it's bonding money, and it's in the bonding bill, so I think it's okay, which is why I voted for it to stay in the bonding bill, if you recall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do.
Okay. So I'm not sure that we need to put this in the policy bill because there's money involved here and how to get money, and I just assume stay clear of money.
Madam Chair, I'll withdraw that amendment.
All right. Thank you. I think... we were very careful to make sure that stayed in the bonding bill because that was the language that came out of this committee. All right. All those in favor? You withdrew that one. All right. We don't have to vote on that one.
Oh, Madam Chair, I'll take the vote on mine, but we better present it first. So.
I think then this has been passed out.
Has that been passed out?
No.
Now, apparent Representative Bimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a two-word oral amendment.
Okay.
Great time for that.
Well, this is being passed out.
Okay. It's on page 17, line 22. Members, if you remember, we had a discussion about agricultural education and being able to get economics credit and or some science credit. And there's been some, since we passed that, members, there's been some discussion about whether it was intended for a science taking under the ag education area to be a substitute for a chemistry or biology or whatever, and that is not the intent, members. So what I'd like to do is just add two words on line 22 where it says, if you can follow with me, an agricultural science course may fulfill strike A and put in the words an elective. So it would read, an agricultural science course may fulfill an elective science credit requirement under this section. The intent is not to have supplant the regular biology, chemistry. This hopefully makes it a little more clear, Madam Chair and members. So if you would, I don't know if you want to vote on that or if you want to incorporate that to Mr. Representative Biskins.
Representative Biskins.
Madam Chair, I don't think I can incorporate Representative Demmer's motion, but I do support the motion.
All right, then we will vote on that. Is there any discussion of Representative Demmer's verbal? Representative Brian.
Representative Demmer, just a question. So then would this agriculture science credit not count as one of the non-elective science credit courses?
It would count as a science credit, but it would not replace biology or chemistry or whatever that we have said they have to take. But there's three credits that they must take, so it would fulfill that third credit if they chose to take the agriculture science instead of a different science.
Well, Madam Chair, then I wonder why we add the word elective, because it already says may.
Madam Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greiling, as far as I was concerned, it was fine the way it was. There was somebody that made an interpretation that said, well, maybe I can read this to say that you could take this in place of one of the required, that would allow it to be taken in place of one of our required courses, and so this hopefully would clear that, and that was the only intention. I agree with you. I didn't see a problem, but if they're more comfortable with that, I was comfortable.
All right. Is there any more discussion to that verbal?
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson was... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, to me, it muddies it up because you just explained it that it could be one of the required courses.
No. It wouldn't be. There are three required courses. Two of them are specific courses. The third is whatever the student chooses to take. This could be the third.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Thank you. Ms. Larson has brought up an issue, and I think I'd just like to withdraw the amendment for now.
All right. Well, withdraw. Maybe the intent of the committee would be enough to clarify what this is all about. Would we say that? I think it should be pretty clear after all this discussion what this is about, right? All right. So for now, that's withdrawn. Representative Dorn.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Now, the reason this looks like this is because the amendment was the wrong engrossment before it was cleaned up in our committee. So if you want to explain what this is.
Madam Chair and members, I will move the language that has been distributed, and it is, I believe, now the correct version, the second engrossment, and we would, as I understand it, amend it to Article 2. There are a couple of changes, members, that you should know, and Madam Chair, I would like to delete in this language that was distributed on the second page, Section 27, that rulemaking language was not to be part of this motion. It got copied in with the others. So if I can incorporate that in my motion, that Section 27 is deleted from the language you're looking at. And then, Madam Chair, I would note that this is the language that was in the House Omnibus Bill, with one exception. There is one change, and that's on page 1, lines 51.31, and the one word on 51.32. It was a reference to some reimbursement, and the intent of the language is that there is no cost attached to it. So what you're looking at then, members, with the deletion of Section 27 and with this one exemption, is the language that was in the Omnibus Bill. And I think people are familiar. This was the initiative that Representative Erdahl had worked on. And I offered, members, because my understanding was that this was not a controversial piece among the members in policy or the Finance Committee, and that's why it was in the Omnibus Bill. So
I believe it is in the Senate bill.
Yeah. Okay.
Is there discussion? Representative?
I don't mean to be dense, but the sheet,
you
Representative Dorn, that was passed out deals with Section 24.
Yes.
And then goes on to House Law 4040, Emergency All Hazards Preparedness. Then there's a second page. You've got to direct me to specifically what the provisions that you're talking about.
Madam Chair, I think I'm going to need some staff help, because the problem was that the language that was submitted for the amendment was the first engrossment, and that had been changed, and they wanted to get the language of the second engrossment, and this was the way staff could do it to show us the actual language. But I think maybe Ms. Larson could help us.
Ms. Larson. I don't know which of you drew this up. Was it Ms. Larson? Are you the one that drew up?
Madam Chair, my apologies. My understanding is this, that the intent of Representative Erdahl is to include exactly the same language with respect to this task force that appeared in House File 4040, the first engrossment, with one exception. He wants to be absolutely certain that there is no cost impact to the task force, and consequently wants to foreclose the task force members from being eligible for any reimbursement. The language already forecloses any compensation being paid to task force members, but he wants to make certain that they also are foreclosed from receiving reimbursement for any expenses related to serving on that task force. It would be consistent with the language that is in Representative Klinzing's proposal about the K-12 technical science engineering center proposal.
Okay.
I think the intent is to make them exactly parallel so that neither task force has any fiscal impact.
Okay. Is there discussion on this? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if the commissioner has not already begun this emergency all hazard preparedness and if it's necessary for us to dictate an advisory task force? Do we know?
I think
the department has been working.
They have already worked on a policy, but I can't tell you for sure. Ms. Vessel, do you wish to testify? Briefly, please. It is 10 to 9. Just to keep you apprised of the time, folks.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, Margaret Vessel, Department of Education. And it is true that the department is working in coordination with the Department of Public Safety. This language would not prohibit from what's going on. It would not hinder our progress. You could go either way. We would be neutral.
All right. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, while the department may be working on it, and I appreciate their efforts along that line, so I think to some members of the legislature, it's important that they weigh in on this issue also and put forward legislative desire to have this move forward, too. So I see no problem with this amendment, Madam Chair.
All right, if there's not more discussion, I would suggest we vote on this, and then we will have 5 minutes to hear from Mr. Van Sickle regarding the question that was asked by Representative Dabney. All right. Since we're all fully informed and ready to vote, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got language now if we want to take water to fix this ag science thing.
Okay, Mr. Van Sickle, you may come down, and then we have the language for the ag science piece. What page was that again?
Okay, members, Madam Chair, this is again on page 17, line 22, of the language that they came up with Larson. An agricultural science course may fulfill a science requirement. Okay, I'll let Ms. Larson do it.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, on the document A06-1620, page 17, line 22, delete under, and on line 23, delete this section and insert that is in addition to the specified science requirements in biology and chemistry or physics under Clause 3. Madam Chair, shall I repeat that one more time?
Yes, please.
Page 17, line 22, delete under. Line 23, delete this section and insert. That is in addition to the specified science credits in biology and chemistry or physics under clause, we should say paragraph A, clause 3.
All right, is that clear to everyone?
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering if we should also deal with the 2011 to 2012 school year and later. No, I'm just funning, actually. Madam Chair, to Ms. Larson, what was wrong with the much more simple kitchen table language that Representative Demmer put forward?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, in paragraph A, there are references to elective course credits. And it's not clear whether the science credits are required. There are three required credits of science. And the required credits are not described as elective. They are required. And so I think it creates some amount of confusion about what the actual intent is.
Okay.
Representative Biskins.
And Madam Chair, Representative Demmer started off by trying to alleviate confusion, and so if this does an even better job, I support the amendment.
All right. Seeing no more discussion, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted, and Mr. Van Sickle, if you could just comment.
Did we vote on the bill?
Pardon?
Did we vote on the bill?
Yes, let's vote on the bill first. That's a good point.
Madam Chair?
Because the smudges have nothing to do with the bill.
Madam
All right?
Chair?
All right, so Representative Biskin renews his amendment to move this to rules, incorporating the amendments that were added in this committee.
Madam Chair?
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to renew my motion that House File 3179, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration.
All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I think somebody voted aye and no. Exactly. It's always nice to have both. All right. Thank you, members. That bill has passed, and we'll go on to rules, and hopefully we'll see it on the floor shortly. Mr. Van Sickle, could you address the issue that was raised that I only heard about recently, actually? So if you could address that issue, that would be excellent.
Madam Chair, representatives, I'll try to be as brief as possible. I know you have other places to go. Let me explain this in two parts. First, what's normal, and then what's occurred. Normally, smudges, poor erasures, double grids, stray marks are commonplace in optical mark reading. There are two places that that stuff is caught in the process. One is called a post-edit scan, where anything that can't be resolved by the scanner, and the scanner reads about 16 different levels of darkness, certainly things that we can't see with our eyes. So that's one place where we would have caught this normally and where that's taken care of. People actually look at the answer documents. Second place is what's called an erasure analysis, where we look at multiple marks and if there's anything odd going on there. That's always in place in a system. So what happened here in terms of making this more difficult or exacerbating that problem? The answer document design for this year is new. And unfortunately, the bubbles on pages are usually offset by at least a half a bubble. They were not done that way this year. And so those rub-offs and smudges are more pronounced and certainly are going to be in places that they aren't typically on a regular answer document when it's designed properly. So those two edit processes would have caught this anyway, but because it has been a fairly large problem and it's in grades 4 through 10 and 11, then we need to take a look at that in a more proactive way. Every answer document will be looked at. The scanner will be recalibrated, take a look at the light marks, scans 4, 5, 6, and 7. We will have people look at every one of these things and interrogate those answer documents and see which ones are proper and not proper and which ones should be coded as the student's response. We will then add a number of data analyses on the back end. That is multiple marks per page because you can put the pages together and see what kinds of patterns there are. We'll also look at various score patterns in the erasure analysis to make sure that this data is correct. It's an unfortunate incident, and nobody's more probably chagrined about it than I am. But we put things in place. The last part of this is we have demanded that Pearson get an outside person to take a look at this extra edit process. And so I believe they are getting HumRow, an independent company, to need to take a look at the process of editing and reviewing all those answer documents. And so there'll be a third party, if you will, taking a look to make sure that this is done properly. I don't know if that's answered your question or not, sir.
Did you have a question, Representative Biskins?
No, madam. Yeah, I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. But first, a comment. I can see Dade County vote counters in Florida holding things up to the light. I get that picture in my mind. But, Madam Chair, to Dr. Van Sickle, what is going to be the cost to the state to fix this problem? Is there an estimate?
Mr. Van Sickle.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative, there will be no additional cost to the state of Minnesota for fixing the problem.
All right. I understand it's about, a dozen districts that have really had a major issue with it, and most of them are going along fine, or is that not the case?
Madam Chair, we've had about 13 districts call with serious or moderate concern. Certainly, different districts are handling these things in different ways. It, as I said, this is not an unusual problem. The answer document design does exacerbate it some. But so far, 13 districts have raised various levels of concern about this.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Van Sickle. We appreciate you taking the time. And members, it is the dock of 9, and I would like to do the minutes. If you would take a look at your minutes for our last meeting on Friday, April 11th. Representative Dabney moved. All right. He caused us a little extra time here, so he's moving the minutes. All right. These were the ones where we passed out our main bill, so you might want to look at them a little more carefully. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. Approved, I should say. And this meeting is adjourned.